So am I still waiting, waiting a long time,
waiting for tonight.
Listen to Reuven.
Well, you know something, Mean Gene? Something that's really funny that we've been laughing about in the back is the fact that everybody said the Macho Man has a legitimate injury, brother. What a joke. The Macho Man's arm is perfect. That was just a plan because between the Stinger, Macho Man, and Hulk Hogan, the WCW title, brother, is going to be with the Hulkamaniacs, just like the people.
You can hear him, Hulk. Listen to him.
You know something, brother? Observe this, brother. This is what we call a rag sheet, brother. They say the Giant is going to win the match. They said Macho Man was hurt. This is like a dinosaur compared to the internet, brother. The internet's got the scoops. We're going to steal the belt, the Stinger, Macho Man, and Hulk Hogan together. The Macho Man's not hurt. And what are you Hulkamaniacs going to do when the Stinger, Macho Man, and Hulk Hogan run wild on you guys? What are they going to do?
Welcome, everyone, to Review Away. It's John Pollock here along with Wei Ting. And on tonight's show, we are going to be reviewing World War III from November of 1995. But a lot of stuff we have to get into, Wei. As most people realized this past week, we have redone the website at thefightnetwork.com and by extension, liveaudiowrestling.com. So there are a lot of changes that have been made to the site, and we just want to make it as easy as possible for all of you to be able to navigate and download this show, which if you're listening to right now, congratulations, you found the show. But I think the easiest way for everybody to our iTunes account or the Podbean account, because that's where we house them for iTunes, and you can simply go to that site. The link is in all of my updates. You just go there, and there's a little icon. It says Audio MP3. You right-click it, and you save it right to your desktop. That area has not changed at all. It is the most user-friendly avenue we have right now. So anyway, we will keep you updated, and hopefully all of this will be easy. But I would stress that all of you go to the Podbean account or just subscribe on iTunes for free. It costs nothing to subscribe. All of our shows go up on iTunes. And I've also corrected a problem where as soon as it's uploaded, it goes to iTunes. You see, there was this problem where when we would upload it to Podbean, it should automatically go to iTunes, but you have to disable a function or else it'll wait a full 24 hours. So that has now been disabled, and now as soon as it goes up on Podbean, it will also go up on iTunes, and you can get it directly to your desktop whenever we do a show, which we do 3 a week, everybody. We do The Law, we do Review of Raw, and we do Review and Impact. So that is your quick little 411 on the new website, and to make it as easy for you, if you have any problems, Wei's cell phone number is 416.
No, shut up.
Please email either me or Wei. You can contact us through Facebook or just email us, john@thefightnetwork.com, and I will get back to you ASAP about any problems and make sure that you have the address to get to either our iTunes or Podbean account, and you can download the shows seamlessly.
What is the address you're supposed to type into your iTunes for to subscribe? What is that?
It's a long address for iTunes.
Oh, I got it. Yeah, is everybody listening? Everybody writing this down? For those of you who use iTunes or another podcast subscription service, you can go within iTunes to subscribe to podcasts, which you should be able to find if you can.
If you just go to the iTunes store and you search Live Audio Wrestling, it'll come up.
That'd be easy.
And you just subscribe to it rather than the really long address. But I will make sure in all of my updates this week, I will have at the bottom of my updates, I always have links, and I will have the Podbean and Apple links at the bottom that you simply have to click on, and you can either subscribe or you can just download a la carte every time.
If you are looking to type it, it is itpc://lawradio.podbean.com/feed.
Perfect. So there you go, everybody. We apologize for any headaches. And again, just contact us directly if any of this does not make sense.
But enjoy the pretty new website. And along with all of our podcasts now, in the media section is a video section where now you can see all of the work that we do on a daily basis here at the Fight Network. All our wrestling pieces, a lot of our MMA pieces, and also boxing as well. A lot of John and Jimmy Corderas' video previews are up there. Each time something goes up, you will be able to see it right there, and as well all of your daily wrestling news and whatever else.
Yeah, the website is much more up to date now in terms of technology. Our old site, we couldn't even embed video in there, so that was always a frustration. Obviously, we're a television company, so posting video kind of important.
And please participate. Whether it be good feedback or bad feedback, please participate. I'm not going to tell you to, pose as a...
if there's any petitions, I will block you. We have that ability now. Thank God.
But please participate in the discussions. I love to read and see what you guys are always thinking. So do that.
So, yeah, that is the update on the new website, thefightnetwork.com. And, of course, you can still go to liveaudiowrestling.com or just simply thefightnetwork.com/wrestling. Same destination, different routes. So way from now, we get that out of the way. Uh-huh. Our big promo a go-go there, and into our review of World War III, taking place November the 26th of 1995 from Norfolk, Virginia at the Norfolk Scope. Do you know what happened at the Norfolk Scope
I sure do.
April of 98. That is where the DX invasion of Nitro took place.
Oh, that's
they went
I
to the
it.
Norfolk Scope.
That's right.
In their big tank. So here we go, everybody. This was the first ever... 60-man Battle Royal WCW put together with three different rings. Now, this title became vacant after Halloween Havoc of 95, which we reviewed last year.
Yes, featuring the infamous sumo monster truck battle between the Giant and Hulk Hogan, which resulted in the Giant falling to his death off of Cobo Hall.
Yep, and an hour later, he walked back to the ring unscathed. And then they had a match, Hulk Hogan and the Giant, which ended in a no contest, we thought. And then it turned out that Jimmy Hart had a stipulation in his contract that if Hulk Hogan did not defeat the Giant, he lost the title. So I believe...
Wait.
I believe the Giant won by DQ in this.
The Giant won by DQ, and then the next night on Nitro, some WCW official, or me and Gene, brought up the fact that a title can't change hands via decision. But then Jimmy Hart said he negotiated the contract for this match as Hulk Hogan's manager, and he had negotiated the clause in there that a title can change hands on disqualification. Then... a WCW official comes in and says, Jimmy Hart is partially right. However, the Giant is not champion.
So even though he won the title exactly as the contract stipulated, he was not the champion and the title was vacant. This was all an elaborate way for Hogan to drop the title without doing a job, everybody.
Oh, my God. So awful.
But it's okay because he would put over the new champion extremely strong on this show.
Yes.
So let's get into it, Way. The show started off. Now, mind you, I was home last week. I was given a day off, and I got ahead and watched this. So this is like 10 days ago I watched this show. Hmm. So I hope I can recollect well. And before we started, I want to thank some of the listeners who contacted me hoping that I felt better after Tuesday. Oh. I was in rough shape on Tuesday, Way.
Yeah, you were. How are you feeling?
I'm better today, but Tuesday was... I have not felt that sick in years.
Yeah.
I will never be returning to O'Grady's.
Oh, it's that bad, huh?
Like, it was horrible. Like, I woke up Tuesday feeling terrible. As soon as we finished the podcast on Tuesday, I told Way, I can't believe I didn't throw up during that podcast. Mm. And I immediately went home because our boss, Dave, basically said, wow, you look really pale. I'm like, yeah, I'm about to vomit right now. I went home. I did not watch any TV. It was just, I was dead on Tuesday.
Oh, that's
like
awful.
Just a horrible 24 hours.
Yeah, I had no idea how bad you actually were.
And then I missed Wednesday. I was sick as well. Yeah. By the end of Wednesday, I was feeling much better. And today... I'm pretty much back.
And what do you think it was from? Just from those?
Yeah, I blame those chicken wings.
Oh, no.
I absolutely blame those chicken wings. They tasted suspicious when I was having them.
Yeah.
I was not happy. And
my chicken parmesan was fine, so I recommend that.
As long as you turned out okay. Because that's what everyone asks. They're like, well, who you were eating with? Did they get sick? I'm like, no, he didn't order the wings, but no, I did. No. So, folks, I don't mean to blast O'Grady's. Big supporters of them over the years.
Don't get their chicken wings.
I got food poisoning. I'm fairly certain it was food poisoning. I don't think it was the flu. I blame those wings. So let's get into it. World War III. This made me almost as sick. I'm just kidding.
Yes.
Right. Opening promos way. From Lex Luger, Johnny B. Badd, Ray Traylor, The Giant Sting, Sergeant Craig Pittman, Eddie Guerrero, Marcus Bagwell, Scotty Riggs, Michael Wall Street. And they're all talking about the exact same thing, about winning the WCW title. And there's a gag here where they all say they're going to throw out the Disco Inferno first. Horrible opening here.
I actually, this was cut off from the web portion.
Oh, was it?
That. Yeah.
Oh, you didn't even get to see it.
Yeah, but I did see Tony Schiavone and Bobby Heenan's introduction where Schiavone exclaims, perhaps this is just a wise prediction on his part, that this was going to be the biggest night we've ever had on pay-per-view television.
Well, before we finish here, this opening video, I forgot to include some notes here I did make. Some of the highlights included the fact that they were pushing a 60-man battle royal, but they kept recycling the same 10 people for comments, like multiple times. They went to Scotty Riggs, who said he was going to eliminate Ric Flair tonight. Alex Wright said that at the end, he will party and freak out if he wins. And then Ray Traylor says he will win, and anyone with a problem can kiss his, and there's a crash sound effect to open the pay-per-view before he can say ass.
Wow.
So your announcers for tonight's show, everybody, are Tony Schiavone and Bobby Heenan. And yes, Schiavone says this is going to be the biggest pay-per-view they have ever presented, World War III. Mm-hmm. And Schiavone picks Hogan, and Heenan picks Savage, but then changes his mind to the Giant and later Flair. So they've got the setup here. First of all, from a visual aesthetic point of view, Wei, the three-ring setup, did you like this?
I like any sort of... I did like it. I don't know...
WCW kind of...
I liked it.
They kind of introduced that multiple rings. Like, they do that for Fall Brawl with two rings.
War Games.
I kind of always liked shows that at least visually looked different.
Yeah, I
from
agree.
The television, from other pay-per-views, it just made the... That's what I kind of liked about the... Specifically Fall Brawl. With the two rings, just made it different.
I guess it might have sucked to just be a fan there if you're buying a front row ticket and you paid all that money. And
well, not to mention that if you are doing pretty well business-wise, you're cutting off a lot of seats to fit in two other rings. Hmm. But WCW wasn't having that problem in 95.
Yeah. But on camera, I guess it looked good. The match itself, as we'll get to later on, I didn't think was visually presented the best, but... We'll see.
They threw to the first of 465 interviews that Gene Okerlund conducted on this show, where he said it's time to fish or cut bait. And he's with Randy Savage, Hulk Hogan dressed in black, and Sting. And Hogan says that he's been on the dark side, but he's back.
What does that mean? What was the storyline there? Why was Hogan in the dark side?
Well, he had to go fight the Dungeon of Doom. And in order to fight them, he had to turn to the dark.
And that means dressing in black?
Yeah.
Okay. So then he says he's traveled back from the dark side, and he takes off his black bandana, tosses it into a bin, and the bin inexplicably lights up.
Yeah, just on cue. As soon as it... Because it sensed the darkness. It was just like an exorcism or something. Yeah. And... then Hogan puts over Sting, because apparently Hogan and Savage had been doubting Sting's allegiance, with Lex Luger recently turning heel, but Sting's still a friend of Luger's.
Yeah.
So Savage calls Sting the coolest dude in the world, and then Hulk Hogan pulls this out of his pocket.
Yeah. What was it?
He informs us that this is what we call a rag sheet. And this rag sheet says that Savage has an arm injury and that it's completely bullshit. And he says, observe this. And they throw the Wrestling Observer newsletter into the garbage and it burns. And they say the rag sheet also said that the Giant would win the Battle Royal tonight and that Savage is 110%. And then Hogan says that this is the past. And he says that the internet is the future. This is awesome because this is 1995.
Yeah.
And he says that
the newsletters are yesterday's news, and the internet is the future, and that's what everyone's doing today.
Well, he was right. And the internet says even worse things than what the Observer says.
That being said, 15 years later, the Observer is still thriving within the wrestling community.
On the internet.
Yes, you can still, you get, most people probably subscribe to the online version. Yes.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, this was a surreal segment. Wade.
It was.
Now, had you heard about this prior to watching this event?
Nope.
I was hoping you hadn't, because I knew that this occurred. I knew one time we had to do this pay-per-view just for that.
Mm-hmm.
This was really strange, and the backstory is even more amusing, because what the Observer had reported was that Savage had a legitimate arm injury and that he was limited, and I don't know the exact Observer that wrote about this, but I assume they also said the Giant was likely going to go over. So Savage, in trying to prove Meltzer wrong, not only worked the singles match, but he worked the Battle Royal and won the Battle Royal. And you'll notice his arm was taped up. His 110% arm was taped up.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually injured it further because of his working on it in this state at World War III. So, Observer, I'm fucked, but I'm right.
So we can blame Dave Meltzer for fucking
up
Savage.
No, we can blame these morons here who decided to prove Dave Meltzer wrong and in doing so fucked up Savage's arm and put the title on your injury-prone headliner.
Great.
Unbelievable, this company. Anyway, then we go to a video package for Diamond Dallas Page and Johnny B. Badd, and they showcase some highlights from WCW Saturday Night, where Kimberly gets pissed off at DDP and announces that, as a result, she is putting herself up as a prize in this match because she knows how important the title is to DDP compared to the woman who cooks, cleans, and shines his shoes to tease the breakup. So Kimberly, to be independent, says that I will objectify myself and hand myself over to a man who beats another man for me. This was incredibly odd.
Yeah, well, this was her version of girl power.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I will go to the better wrestler. So we get Johnny B. Badd against Diamond Dallas Page, a rematch from Halloween Havoc for the TV title. Johnny B. Badd defending the title. DDP comes out with this gimmick that shoots out confetti, and then Johnny B. Badd comes out with, like, sparklers.
Hmm.
And it was like, WCW's props department was, like, right out of a garage
sale. Johnny B. Badd had the confetti gun.
Then it was the other way around. No, he shot out sparklers
but
from the
Johnny
side of
B.
his
Badd
cape.
Traditionally came out with that
yes,
stupid confetti
yes, but
gun.
This time DDP did.
Okay.
Because I guess we want sparklers and confetti to start off World War III. DDP... I noticed here a terrible mullet, and then all of a sudden I looked at Nick Patrick, and I looked at Johnny B. Badd, and they were all sporting mullets.
Hmm.
Horrible look for 1995. DDP is on the floor, and Mark Mero teased doing a 619 running into the ropes while DDP was on the floor. They got onto the floor, and DDP threw Kimberly into Mero and then sucker punched him. Badd came back and laid out a DDP with a haymaker, and Kimberly put up a sign that said 10+. Then we saw a powerbomb to DDP for a two count. DDP attempted a tombstone, but it was reversed by Johnny B. Badd, who hits the tombstone for a two count, which I thought was a little excessive for the opener. I don't care what promotion you're in. The tombstone is a pretty established finish, and they're using it for near falls in the opener.
Sure, but I mean, Benoit later on in this match itself, it was traditionally like a transitional move almost for guys like Benoit. And I think in Mexico as well, it's I agree with you, though. In North America, it's a very different type of move. But it's not like, why would they care? It's a guy on the other show.
Johnny B. Badd ends up hitting a leg drop over the top rope onto DDP and gets the clean win. And then Mero and Kimberly hug after the match, and Mero carries a 10 sign to symbolize both of them being a 10.
Okay.
Okerlund goes up to Johnny B. Badd and Kimberly, and Badd says that Kimberly can think about cornering her and won't own her. And Mero ends that by saying that after tonight's Battle Royal, he says, let's go to war.
Yeah.
And he's going to be in the Battle Royal later tonight.
Mero says he's going to give... He's trying to convince Kimberly to manage him and says, Kimberly, do you want to change your life? Do you want to do what you've always dreamt of doing? Well, what... to manage Johnny B. Bad.
Yeah,
like, what is she doing? Does, like, she just walks people down the ring. Do you think she actually does any managing? Does she call up promoters and try to get matches for DDP?
Sure. She negotiated a great deal for DDP with WCW. Up next way, a match that I know we were all dying to see, a taped fist match between Big Bubba Rogers and Jim Duggan. They stated it had to end in a pinfall or a knockout. Now, first of all, the psychology of a taped fist match. I've always hated this stipulation match. It makes taped fist. It's designed to protect the person throwing the punch because it obviously is going to, you're going to tape your knuckles and therefore protect your hand. Now, tape does not make your punch harder. It doesn't mean the punch is going to be harder. It just means you can throw more punches because you're protecting your hand.
And thus the danger involved in this match. You'll see more punches thrown.
All right. Could this not have been a bare fist match?
The guys tape their fists anyway. Like Van Damme and Samoa Joe, they tape their fists anyway.
All right. I hate this gimmick. Duggan attacks.
It does nothing, absolutely.
Duggan attacks Rogers from behind to start the match. They travel from ring to ring, and for whatever reason, whenever they went to a new ring, the crowd popped they went to a new ring.
They tried their best to make use of it, and at one point, Duggan puts Rogers' head in between the two ring posts from the two opposing rings for absolutely zero effect. Look what I can do. I can stuff your head in between two posts.
Oh, Jim Duggan. Shivani and Heenan are not sure if a countout can end the match, even though the ring announcer announced this like 2 minutes ago.
See, but it was so dumb because you can travel outside of the ring, but the countout ends when you get into a new ring.
Yes. What would that solve?
Like, I don't know.
A countout. Whatever. Well, Michael Wall Street then comes out with a chain and.
VK Wall Street.
No, sorry, VK Wall Street runs out with a chain, but he's knocked out
Vincent
by
Kennedy
Duggan.
Wall Street.
Vincent Kennedy Wall Street?
That's VK, that was the joke. They named him VK, yes, because of McMahon.
I never knew that.
Yeah, why else would they pick the initials VK?
I never knew. Never cared to, because shortly after they started calling him Michael Wall Street.
He was Michael Wall Street and then he turned to VK.
Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. I never knew. Duggan knocks out Wall Street, but then Rogers gets the chain and hits an uppercut on Duggan, and then Duggan is down for the 10 count. So you had a whole match built around the taped fist, and it ends with a better weapon, the chain.
Yes. Oh, completely meaningless. Completely.
Now this builds to a chain match. Wait, now they're gonna have a chain match on pay per view.
This is awful. This was some awful, awful shit. Like, yeah. I was really unhappy while this match was going on that I had to watch it because. Here you have Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Ray Traylor, and Mike Rotunda. At least in the WWE, these guys all had some amusement in their matches due to their campy gimmicks. Now that they're in WCW, they don't even have their characters. They're just playing their plain old selves with absolutely nothing. No redeeming
Big
value.
Big Bubba Rogers wears suspenders and
black
pants.
Oh, my God. It was just these generic guys who can't wrestle. Just doing these so that finishes and stipulations that lacked any sort of creativity. Garbage.
Interview number 3, Gene Okerlund with Ric Flair, and they discuss him turning on Sting at Halloween Havoc, and he says he's going to win the WCW for the 12th time. And then they say next up is tag action featuring the women from Japan. And this piqued my interest. We've got Cutie Suzuki and Mayumi Ozaki against Bull Nakano and Akira Hokuto. And thank God, Mike Tenay was brought in here to call this match alongside Shivani and Heenan. I literally wrote, thank God, in my notes, because Shivani and Heenan calling this would have been fun for 40 seconds.
Yeah. Tenay, I guess, what was he doing at this time? The hotline?
This. Yeah, the hotline. He did When Worlds Collide the year prior with Chris Cruz, who was also on this broadcast. And then he was brought in for cruiserweight matches and... for matches where Shivani and Heenan could not pronounce the other's performers' names.
He's almost like a translator.
Yeah, he really is.
A no-nonsense tool that they would bring in to use.
Now, of course, there was a deal going on between WCW and New Japan at the time, and they were using Kensuke Sasaki, who would be on the card later. And as a result, they had the services of Akira Hokuto, who was Sasaki's
Hokuto.
Wife.
Hokuto.
Hokuto? I've always heard Hokuto.
It's K-U-T-O.
Hokuto.
Oh, maybe you're right. I don't know.
I've always heard it pronounced that. You could be very right. I'm going on American pronunciation for years.
Hokuto.
Okay. We'll try and get through this. So this is a... Tanay lines this up as this is a battle of JWP and All Japan Pro Wrestling Women in Japan. So this is an interpromotional match. Shivani and Heenan might as well have gone for a pop at this point because they were not paying any attention. Nakano played the monster heel role. I always enjoyed Nakano's look when she was in WWE. From seeing her stuff in Japan, I mean, just a tremendous presence, especially that worked in Japan and that same kind of like Aja Kong had as well in Japan. There's this great spot where Hokuto holds back Ozaki from tagging
Suzuki.
Hokuto. Fuck. Akira. She's holding her back, and she teases letting her tag her partner, but instead just leaps forward and slaps her in the face to cut off the hot tag. Just great stuff.
That's cool.
Heenan is confused at one point, asking Tanay what his name is.
Yeah.
He's like, my name's Mike. I couldn't believe this. Yeah.
He just seems, Heenan, even more so than Shivani, just seems so out of place here. At least Shivani knew the names of these people, but Heenan
didn't even try.
Completely clueless. Yeah.
Nakano would no-sell the punches from Ozaki, and they basically had Ozaki selling for the first 5 minutes with Cutie Suzuki on the apron waiting for the hot tag. The heel, surprisingly, Wei, got very good heel heat here from the Norfolk crowd. Yeah. I was surprised.
Like, Based on their offense. Yeah. And like they did a lot of, you know, just moves that were easily translatable, no matter whether you knew the people or were fans of them or not. Just hair tossing, you know, simple grabbing of the hair and swinging a girl all the way across the ring. You could tell the crowd was not used to seeing these, you know, women's matches like this, and especially for Japanese women wrestling, and they didn't really know how to react at first, but simple moves like that, they were able to get a reaction from.
Yeah. One little thing I found, it was obviously the crowd probably not familiar with all these women, and Ozaki and Hokuto both wore like
Hokuto, yeah. You got me messing it up.
They both wore kind of like similar outfits, so it was somewhat hard to tell apart the heel and the baby face.
What
but
are
that's
you saying?
Just a little
they
thing.
All look alike?
Well, I'm saying for the majority here, Bull Nakano was the only one that really stood out. And if you're seeing both here, it's hard to tell Ozaki apart.
Well, I could tell them apart.
Okay. Don't even let's not go down there. You know exactly what I mean. Mike Tanay brings up the Peace Festival from Pyongyang, North Korea, that drew 150,000 fans, which is where Akira met Kensuke Sasaki, and they got engaged on their very first date. And that's actually the largest attendance to ever watch pro wrestling. Of all time, but there's a bit of an asterisk there because the government forced people to go attend this
Peace Festival.
So, yes, it was 150,000 people, but it was kind of a... be there or we'll shoot you. Powerbomb, kind of like Impact, I was going to say. But then we see a powerbomb and a missed moonsault on Suzuki. Then Suzuki takes 4 foot stomps by the... it's Nakano who takes 4 foot stomps by the baby faces. This results in a 2 count.
As if there... It was really... it was a neat spot because there you have Nakano down on the ground, and then these women would almost like they were going down a water slide repeatedly. They would climb up the ring, jump down, and climb back up, and then jump down again. Yeah, it was cool.
Hokuto hit a tequila sunrise, then a forward splash to the faces on the floor. Then we saw the doomsday device to Ozaki, but Suzuki broke up the count. And then the finish came when Bull Nakano hit a guillotine leg drop onto Ozaki for the win. Heenan calls it the greatest women's match he has ever seen. And he says, I've seen Penny Banner and Betty Nicolai, and these women were the best he's ever seen. Now, all due respect to Penny Banner and Betty Nicolai, but as athletes... these four blew those two away.
The last 4 minutes here were tremendous. And I would say, overall, probably the match of the night.
Yes, and that's not saying a lot, but this match would hold up against a very good card as well. This was really, really good, and I enjoyed WCW doing this. And in an interesting note way, November of 95, there was this match on the WCW pay-per-view, and that same month, the WWF had a Survivor Series elimination match with all Japanese women. So it was a big fad here in North American wrestling at this point. So very strong match.
And we get the generic Asian music playing as the team winning team celebrates.
Yes, right off of Women of Wrestling.
And any
with the flute.
And any North American Asian wrestler.
Yes, keeping the tradition alive. But they didn't have any salt.
No salt.
So a little progression. Yeah. Interview number four by Gene Okerlund. This time he's with Jimmy Hart and Lex Luger. Luger, did it look like he was reading off a prompter during this promo? Because he was looking down, and it looked like he was reading, and he states that he's the past, present, and future of WCW, which is not a claim I would want to make.
I don't know. I don't think they have prompters on it for these shows, do they?
Well, if they did, they should have been camera level and not on the ground.
Right. There was a really awkward moment here where Hart begins the segment by cutting some promo about Savage. And then Luger just like looks like he's agreeing with Hart. Then he raises his hand up to give Hart a high five. And then Jimmy just turns away and doesn't see the hand up. But then like Luger just leaves his hand up there for like 5 seconds.
Awesome.
Almost as if to make it look like he was waving instead of going for
a
high five.
That's great. I just want to go back and watch that. Next up, we've got Kensuke Sasaki accompanied by Sonny Ono. Taking on Chris Benoit.
Yes, for the U.S. title, which Sasaki holds. He just defeated... Who did he defeat for the U.S. title at a previous show?
Was it Road Warrior Hawk?
I don't know. Who cares? Sorry. I'm sorry for even bringing that up. But anyway, Sasaki comes out to more Japanese flute Asian music.
Well, they bought the CD. This is track two. They cut to a woman with a very large chest, and then they announced she was a Hooters girl, and they had some promotion going on with the Hooters girls, as they showed them multiple times.
Okay.
Probably the only women in attendance at the Scope. Sasaki, another gigantic mullet, ditto for Benoit. Shivani asks about being the neighbor of Sasaki and Hokuto. And
Hokuto.
Yeah, he says, what would it be like being their neighbors, the neighbors of this wrestling couple? And Heenan makes a joke about rice. Horrible. Heenan says tonight's Battle Royal winner will be an instant millionaire and an instant star. And then Heenan starts talking about how tonight's pay-per-view, this is just the beginning. What is going to happen on Nitro tomorrow? I'm thinking, wow, this guy would fit in great with WWE right now.
Yeah, tune in.
Who cares about Survivor Series? We're going to get The Miz winning the title tomorrow on free television.
Tune in to Nitro for the main event.
This was a very slow technical match to start with pressure applied by Benoit. Very much the New Japan Pro Wrestling junior heavyweight style where they'd start off very slow and then build up to their big heat spots. Heenan says that the Canadian government has announced that Benoit is Canada's greatest athlete, which I'm sure the Canadian government has rescinded since.
I'm sure this was just a complete lie.
Yes, I agree. Then we see a suicide dive spot by Benoit, who nearly goes face first into the guardrail. This did not look safe at all. Ono then comes on to commentary and discusses being kicked off of WCW Pro. And Ono says that they have worked out an arrangement for Starrcade between WCW management and himself. Just a terrible, terrible stereotype in the mid-90s of this Japanese immigrant. Who barely speaks broken English. Mm-hmm. He's confused. Mm-hmm. He's always happy. It's just like the go-to stereotype. And then this guy sued WCW years later for racial discrimination.
For making him portray this character?
Yes.
Okay.
We see a tombstone by Sasaki, which was countered by Benoit, which was the exact same spot we saw in the opener.
Mm-hmm.
Poor job by the agents. Yeah. Top rope Hurricane Rana by Benoit for a two count. Then Heenan points out a woman yawning in the front row. Heenan was just on fire on this show. Then we see a Kimura into like a neck crank submission by Sasaki, but
yeah,
Benoit reaches
the
ropes. The Stranglehold Gamma. Then there's a big clothesline by Sasaki and a brainbuster. And
it's the Northern Lights bomb that his wife also uses.
And damn, you did your homework on this. And Sasaki, out of nowhere, gets the win. And this was like, the comeback kind of came out of nowhere after Benoit took the majority of the match, and I thought the ending was kind of flat.
That's right. Especially, I think added to the fact was that we were, neither of us were that familiar with the moveset of Sasaki, and so we didn't really know any of the finishes. And I agree, this was a good match, but it was not great. I actually found it kind of boring, to be honest. Yeah. And I enjoyed his wife's match much more.
Yeah, I agree. Did you catch Heenan's ending line where he said, they were watching the replay and Sasaki's hand is raised. He's like, so powerful, this Suzuki.
Oh.
Interview number 5 with Gene Okerlund, with the Giant, Kevin Sullivan, and Jimmy Hart. And Sullivan calls Giant the uncrowned champion. Okerlund says a lot of people pick Giant to win, and Sullivan says, smart people have, indicating Dave Meltzer.
Huh.
And Hart yells that the only man who wears red and yellow is the Taskmaster. Okerlund tries to push dissension with members of the Dungeon of Doom, wanting to win the title tonight, and Sullivan says it doesn't matter, because the Dungeon will prevail. And then the Giant says, roses are red, violets are blue, I'm going to kick your butt to Kalamazoo.
What a strange promo.
This is your monster heel.
He was channeling Nails.
Citing shitty promo.
He was channeling the spirit of Nails.
Oh, his promo was way worse. Nails is entertaining. He's a mid-card heel. Yeah, this is your top guy.
It was weird because his voice cracks in it and he's talking. He's talking in his giant voice. Like he... Like there's a distortion filter on his voice or something.
Oh, God, I'm going to kick your butt to Kalamazoo.
Yeah, who wrote that?
Fuck. Then we get a video preview of Savage against Luger, where Savage called the heel turn months ago, and it led to a match on Nitro that Luger won with the unexpected help of the Giant. Then we replay the closing angle of Halloween Havoc with Luger applying the torture rack to Hogan along with the Yeti. Then
that was the best part of this video.
It wasn't. It was John Tenta running in to attack Savage while he was under the gimmick of Shark. And when he'd run in, the announcers were cued to yell, Shark attack! Shark attack!
Yeah, but that was really the best part of this video recap, was just seeing all these stupid Dungeon of Doom gimmicks
were the worst.
Make random appearances in the background.
Oh. Man. So the Shark attack was to set up the injury angle to Savage's arm that they later ignored. Okerlund is then with Savage. This is interview number 6 for Okerlund. He has a singles match with Luger coming up, and then the Battle Royal. He says his arm is 1,000,000%, and then says, and that is better than 100%.
It is.
Like, realistically, when you break them down, Randy Savage and Jimmy Snuka had some of the worst promos in history, Ultimate Warrior 2, yeah. But for some reason they're regarded, like, it's fully... It's like 100% delivery, yes. 0% content.
Yes.
Like, they never said anything of substance, or it made zero sense.
Yeah.
Like, 1,000,000%, and that is better than 100%.
Hogan as well.
Yeah.
Really, it's just
Hogan, I'd give at least a step above these. Like, these three were incoherent.
Mm.
Hogan, yeah. I at least had some message, but it wasn't great.
Positive, though, I felt at least, was Mean Gene here. I think he does a very good job with these segments. He comes across as a guy who really, he knows his role well, and he does it with a lot of
he's got an authority
charisma.
Attached
yeah,
to him.
He does it with charisma, despite, you know, only asking questions. Like, just he's just on a really different level than what we're used to these days with, like, a Christy Hemme or a Todd Grisham.
Randy Savage against Lex Luger. Luger, I am giving the Scott Putski Award, which is probably giving him a record that'll never be touched. the left arm of Savage is heavily taped, and Savage begins attacking Luger, hits the top rope elbow drop early, but Jimmy Hart is on the apron to distract the referee, and this allows Luger then...
Bring Savage to the outside, or they end up fighting outside, and for some reason Luger just gets Savage in the torture rack after knocking Savage against the ring.
Luger recovers on the floor, yes, as you mentioned, just drops him on the ground from the torture rack, and then lifts him into the ring, applies an arm submission, and the referee calls for the bell with Savage out, and Luger keeps the hold on. Sting comes out and gets in his face to release the hold, and he does, and they play it up that Sting's a babyface, but he's friends with Luger, and they're going to team up on Nitro tomorrow night.
This wasn't a great match at all.
Nope.
By any means, but at least there was a storyline here, and I was I would say I was more engaged in this match than the previous match with Benoit and Suzuki because the announcers at least kept their focus on this and didn't just make jokes. After this, Sting rushes in, and Sting begs Lex to break the hold.
We then get a preview of Ric Flair versus Sting coming up, and they recap Ric Flair enlisting the help of Sting. And continually, Sting turned him down, saying, no, I always trust you, and you always turn on me. And Flair begs and begs and begs. And finally, Sting picks him to be his partner for Halloween Havoc. Flair is late for the match, finally shows up, gets tagged in by Sting, and then attacks Sting. Ugh. Now, does this make Flair a heel, or does this make Sting an idiot? For continually trusting this guy, and he just makes him look like a fool for doing so. I had no sympathy for Sting in this program.
He's a trusting... If you're a babyface, you always have to give people the benefit of the doubt. But yes, even in a two-minute recap, you can't help but groan at the lazy booking here.
The graphics for this pay-per-view, eh?
Yeah.
WCW was like...
Well, this was 95.
I don't care. It was still really bad. All right. Ric Flair against Sting.
For the 15 millionth time.
Exactly. And this was not one of their more well-remembered matches.
Like, in this feud alone, they've already fought each other three times.
Oh, why not? Flair retreats after the first offensive maneuver and goes into the other ring. Flair does a hip thrust. This was the best part. Flair turned to a woman in the crowd, and he thrust his hip towards her. And this guy jumps up in front of the woman, who must have been her husband, and just looked pissed, yelling at Flair. I rewound it. It was awesome. Go back and watch this moment, because this guy looks so mad that this guy's hitting on his wife.
Oh, from inside the ring.
Yeah, this was so good. Colonel Parker and Sherry, for whatever reason, come out to the entrance and start kissing, and then they disappear, never to be seen again.
Yeah.
This couldn't wait for television. Sting no-sells the chops from Flair. They mentioned that they did a Hogan versus Sting match on Nitro this past Monday, which boggled my mind, for free. I guess you're trying to establish Nitro at this point, but Jesus Christ. Sting misses a splash into Flair on the barricade. Then Flair grabs a chair, but Patrick takes it away. Flair then hits a low blow in the ring and then works on the left leg of Sting. Finally, he applies the figure four and gets a pop. Sting manages to turn it around to reverse the figure four. Then the trademark spots of Flair tossed from the top rope, an Irish whip into the corner and flips over to the apron. Then a superplex off the top, and Sting applies the Scorpion Deathlock, and Flair gives up. Big reaction for the finish.
Mm-hmm.
This was fine.
Yeah, the crowd was really behind once they, you know, finally got started the actual match. And it was like any other match between the two, but it seemed fresh in my mind.
Sting always
so
has had pretty good chemistry with Flair. Yeah. Flair's always been able to accentuate Sting's strengths.
I just don't need to see it multiple times in a month. That's all.
We get a preview for the Battle Royal where, as we recapped off the top, Jimmy Hart put it in Hogan's contract that if he lost by DQ to the Giant at Halloween Havoc, that he lost the title, but WCW officials stepped in and made the title vacant. They say that there will be one Giant in each ring to start, that being the Yeti, the Giant, and Hulk Hogan.
The Yeti.
Yeah. Did you see the graphics here? Because they were taken when Hogan was still with the Dark Side, and they show Hogan in black with war paint and holding like a medieval sword.
I did not see that.
Dumb. Interview number 8 with Gene Okerlund with Hogan prior to the match, and Hogan says it's every man for themselves, and that only the WCW could put this together, and calls this the most dangerous match in history.
Sure.
A battle royal. That's fine.
Yep.
Now, they always did this every year for World War III. They brought in separate announce teams for each ring, and I always liked these little things where you made whatever was going on in each ring was important, and you had specific teams focusing on what the action was, and you pretty much had the announce teams all kind of going back and forth.
It was good in concept, but...
In concept, yeah. This one wasn't the best. I didn't mind it, though. We had Shivani and Heenan on one side, Bischoff and Dusty Rhodes on another. I don't think Dusty Rhodes even knew where he was. And then we had Chris Cruz and Larry Zbyszko, who...
Definitely
Chris Cruz I always have enjoyed.
But definitely the C team amongst the three.
Dusty gives a shout-out to everyone in TV land and on cable systems everywhere to start. And then we get it, Wade, the first ever 60-man Battle Royal. And yes, I wrote down the names of everybody in this Battle Royal.
Oh, my God, wow.
So just so we know, do you want to do a deceased count?
Let's do it.
Okay. We got Arn Anderson, Alex Wright, Ryan Nobbs, Ricky Santana, Dave Taylor, Scott Armstrong, Sting, Joey Maggs, Tez Watley is one, Disco Inferno, Ming, Stevie Ray, Mark Starr, who's a maybe. I don't know about him. Buddy Lee Parker, Lieutenant James Earl. I don't even know who that is. Lex Luger, Eddie Guerrero, The Cobra, The Giant, Paul Orndorff, Chris Kanyon, Bobby Walker, Earl Robert Eaton, Chris Benoit, Randy Savage, Buff Bagwell, Buff Bagwell, The Yeti, Kurosawa, Hugh Morris, Zodiac, VK Wall Street, Diamond Dallas Page, Scott Norton, Brian Pillman is 5, Craig Pittman, One Man Gang, Super Assassin number 1, JL, Jerry Lynn, Bunkhouse Buck, Kensuke Sasaki, Scott Steiner, Shark is 6, Steve Armstrong, Hawk is 7, Dave Sullivan, Scotty Riggs, Johnny B. Bad, Steven Regal, Dick Slater, Max Muscle, Super Assassin number 2, I feel like that Jericho promo, Big Trey Park, Fidel Sierra, The Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan, Jerry Sags, Jim Duggan, Bubba Rogers is 8, Ric Flair, and Hulk Hogan.
That's not bad.
8 out of 60.
8 out of 60.
That's
not bad.
Sure. For a 15-year-old show.
I thought it'd be a lot more.
8.
This was probably the longest introduction ever, seeing it live. It just felt like it kept going on and on, these lost relics in wrestling history. If you want an index of the 1995 WCW roster, and I'm assuming for
this had to be everybody.
Any 90s roster from WCW, just look no further than World War III pay-per-views.
Michael Buffer was in to announce the intro.
By the way,
intro.
The Yeti is now a yellow ninja. Like, he completely,
yeah.
for no reason.
The mummy didn't work for him.
Abandoned the mummy outfit, even though they showed him in the mummy outfit in the
preview.
Wait,
previous. You have Wikipedia up there?
Yeah.
Type in the Yeti, WCW. Okay. Because if I think who it is that played that role, it might be 9.
Ron Rice.
Okay, he's
Ron
alive. Ron Reese. He's
Reese.
Alive.
That's right.
Okay.
So, yes, he was a ninja, and he was dressed as, like, Scorpion from Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, he looked weird, and I didn't know what was going on, so didn't pay too much attention. Now, Michael Buffer, during his intro, I know pro wrestling likes to exaggerate and use a lot of hyperbole, but he said, almost a quarter of a million pounds of mayhem and muscle are in the ring. That struck me as odd, and therefore I did the calculations.
Oh, no.
On average, to equal a quarter of a million pounds, that means the average weight of each performer was 4,200 pounds. A more realistic number was 16,000 pounds. That presuming everyone was in the 285 range. Mm-hmm. So anyway, 3 camera angles to start. This was a little annoying because you couldn't really watch anything. It was just 3 miniature screens. The Yeti was out within 2 minutes, so much for him being the giant of one ring.
He gets eliminated, and the camera completely misses it. That was the problem with these 3 screens. It's just if you're the director or if you're an announcer, even if you're a wrestler, you don't know who's getting the focus when, and the camera completely misses the Yeti's elimination.
This is just horrible battle royal style where, first of all, the view is cut into 3 screens. There's no incentive for a worker to do anything but work safely here.
Yeah.
I mean, and God bless them if they did. I wouldn't want someone doing too much in something where no one can see what you're doing here.
And instead of in a Royal Rumble, at least you get guys in one at a time, so there's at least some space in the ring for you to do.
There's a reason the Royal Rumble doesn't start with 30 guys.
Yeah, but this is a traditional Battle Royal style where everybody starts in there, and so there's absolutely no space for anybody to do anything but, you know, just lay their fists gently on their opponent's heads.
I thought Paul Orndorff was a late Scott Putski candidate, but we can leave it up to you, the listeners, of whether it was Paul Orndorff or Luger.
We'll
I think Luger's a safe bet. Schiavone had to break in to inform us that Mark Starr and Buddy Lee Parker had been eliminated from ring number 2. Match seemed to work much better from a live perspective because I think live, just seeing all those bodies out there, this was perfect for live, but on pay-per-view, it was not translating. Bischoff then just states, "We lost Brian Knobbs, and we lost one of Harlem Heat." Not specifying which. Yeah. Scott Armstrong at one point is taken out on a stretcher with a neck brace, and I didn't know if this was legit or what was going on.
But I doubt it was legit. Why would they even have a...
Well, why would you waste that on Scott Armstrong?
I don't. Just to show how dangerous.
An injury angle for Scott Armstrong. Maybe. Maybe to get over the dangerous aspect. You're probably right.
Yeah. And they just, I think they brought that stretcher out there even beforehand. Like, just to get ready.
Just to be safe.
There was some team named the Mario Brothers. Did you catch that?
Oh, yeah, maybe. I don't know.
They mentioned some dude from the Mario Brothers.
I don't know. I think you're right. Luger was staying on the floor for a while here without being eliminated. Hogan tossed Sags and Stevie Ray over the top rope at the same time. Stevie basically eliminated himself, hopping off the apron.
Oh, the Barrio Brothers. I'm sorry.
The Barrio Brothers.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I even... Maybe I named them in there and they had a name called the Barrio Brothers. Yeah. How lame. We're down to the final 10-way, and two men out of the final 10 are under the age of 35, that being the Giant and Eddie Guerrero. Our others were Hogan, Luger, Flair, Orndorff, One Man Gang, Sting, and Savage. Uh-huh. Sting catapults Anderson into the turnbuckle and knocks Flair out.
For the biggest pop of the match, I'd say.
Yeah, and then Hogan clotheslines Arn Anderson over. Sting and Luger then double-team the Giant, and then Hogan tosses all three men over. This guy, unbelievable. We missed the one-man gang elimination by Savage, and apparently the referee was the only one watching to rule that one-man gang had been eliminated. Then Hogan climbs to the floor under the bottom rope.
He doesn't climb. The Giant pulls him out.
Pulls him from underneath the bottom rope, and then Hogan makes a comeback and body slams the Giant onto the mat on the floor. And the bell rings, and they declare Randy Anderson declares that Savage is the winner, and Hogan protests, stating that he went underneath the ropes and not over. And there apparently is no instant replay in WCW, and nobody
saw this. Yeah, there is an instant replay, but you're going to have to tune into Nitro for the instant replay.
Well, they've got to process. Maybe they've got to dig the footage or something. I don't know. They've got to get it onto the server.
So that's what Mean Gene says. Tune in tomorrow to Nitro for the instant replay.
The audience, loud boos here towards this finish.
Awful.
Okerlund congratulates Savage on winning the title and says he didn't see anything. Savage says he didn't see anything and ends, but it is what it is. Can you handle that? And yes, Hogan says tomorrow night on Nitro he will show Savage the film. And then Hogan wants to, quote, talk turkey. Whatever that means. Schiavone says he's confident the video footage will prove Hogan was right. Thanks a lot, Tony. We've all just seen it at home. The viewer saw what the principal characters are debating. We know what it is. So you're just pissed because you know what the result is. There's no drama of what the footage is going to be for the viewer at home.
Absolutely none. I really despise this finish. Not only for the obvious fact that if you're a paying customer, you basically just got gypped out of a resolution here. And... at least in similar situations, and I look to like a Michaels and Luger finish from a Royal Rumble. Was that Michaels and Luger or was it Bulldog?
Bret and Luger.
Okay, well then, or Michaels both? And Bulldog. Like they both did similar finishes where at least you had legitimate dispute with both men's feet touching the bottom at the same time on different angles, and so you actually had to look at an instant replay. This was just a clear, complete bullshit thing that they didn't even try to spend 5 minutes to think about to create this disputable finish. It
now,
was just lazy.
Logically, you would assume that they would come back with Hogan and Savage for the title. Wrong.
Oh, no.
They would not go to that match.
What did they do?
Hogan wasn't even on the next pay-per-view. Savage was on the pay-per-view. I'm not sure who he worked.
Did they do it on Nitro at least?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay.
So... that was World War III, everybody. I give it a 3.5 out of 10 solely for the women's match. And I'll go so far as a 4 out of 10. There were aspects I enjoyed, but I think Wade put it best. In theory, they were great ideas. Execution, not so much.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a match type, I think...
the matches were pretty bad on this show outside of the women's match.
Yeah. But for the 60-man battle royale, I think that's a good enough idea for a pay-per-view. I don't know, after seeing this, how many people would be willing to pay for it. But fine. To crown a title for a battle royale, for sure, why not? But I give the show a 2 out of 10. I didn't enjoy it.
Wow. A rare show that I give a higher ranking to than Way. Wow. The optimist here. Well, let's get into our feedback then, Way. We'll start off with Stefan Kyle Gosain. Okay, I have a question. I don't watch Impact often, but I saw the first bit of the main event, didn't follow it into reaction, and have a question about the intros.
By the way, this is last week's Impact, we should say.
Oh, yes.
We
didn't get this one last week. Ric Flair's subtitle was Wrestling God. Is that new? Did we read this one last week?
I think we read this
one. Oh, we did. Okay, let's just go. You start off with Daniels.
Well, why don't I start with that one we actually got via email from Ahmad. Ahmad, this is a long one, but I hope you can read it. Way and John, great Survivor Series audio clips of Nails and Bret Hart with Santa. Nails must have influenced Abyss's promos. Anyways, wanted to chime in about this week's Raw. The show definitely seemed a little like a reset type of show for the WWE. I can't definitively say that WWE's direction or storylines will drastically change, but there's a clear emergence of young guys that consistently pervade the 2 hours of Raw. I'm talking about Miz, Bryan, Sheamus, Barrett, and Punk once he's healed. Speaking of which, I will not get tired of Punk saying that none of the divas are smart, sexy, and powerful. But back to my point. I think the WWE realizes that the old guard of Hunter, Taker will be gone, and guys like Orton and Cena are past their peaks in terms of popularity. Unfortunately, I fear that they've built great heels in the last 12 months and barely any baby faces. Bryan Danielson is about the only one that comes to mind, and it's debatable if the WWE even built that face reaction. Anyway, I love this podcast. Keep it up, baby boys.
Okay.
Ahmad Buttons.
There's some very good talent right now on both brands, I think. I think the key is just trying to protect these guys and get them over as stars. I think
he raises an interesting point, though, that how many baby faces have they actually built?
Yeah, they really haven't when you look at it right now. I mean, I think The Miz has potential to be a baby face at some point down the road. I think that's a long way down the road. I think he's a fantastic heel right now, and I was surprised a lot by people who were upset at The Miz winning the title this week, thinking it's a joke. And I get that a lot of people probably don't watch week to week and kind of just think of The Miz as this goofy character from years ago, but he is leaps and bounds the most improved performer over the last 2 years.
I agree. I hear most of that coming from people that really haven't been tuning in too closely and probably must have missed a lot of his excellent work over the past
If you haven't seen him week to week over the last year, then I think maybe that's you can understand why. Like, there was a point where he was the worst part of SmackDown when he was the interviewer. Like, he was terrible at one point, but he has really reinvented his entire character. He's out doing, like, acting lessons on his own. He's clearly gotten better in the ring. He's a terrific promo. I don't see any argument against Miz getting a run with the title right now. And it's fresh.
Yeah. What adds to the confusion a little, for me at least, is the fact that he had the Money in the Bank for this long, and he was building up this Money in the Bank thing for so long. How could anyone not expect him to actually win the title?
Yeah. Not so much. A lot of people are saying that it's become too predictable with the Money in the Bank always leading to a title change, and I think it's still effective if done right.
I mean,
the same could have been said years ago with the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you win the Royal Rumble, you're going to win at WrestleMania. Yeah. I don't think that ever hurt WrestleMania, establishing that. I think it made the Royal Rumble that much more important, just as winning Money in the Bank. It means when you win that, it's significant. It means the company is behind you. So,
I agree.
Let's go on here. Daniel Longworth. Wait, John, I honestly don't know how you guys do 3 reviews a week. I'm about your guy's age, and I can't stand watching this fucking shit for longer than 10 to 15 minutes at a time. It bores me to tears. Well, that's why, as that one picture was photoshopped, we are unstoppable.
Yes. Yes. We can't stop watching wrestling. Nate Milton, 3 quick points. Jaws sounds like a winner. The humanoids need to hear that audio. By the way, somebody on the Facebook group this past week dug up an old GeoCities cache, I guess.
Yes.
Of John's
I saw
old
this.
Wrestling website.
I do not recall this site at all.
Really?
Now, I did have a site, and I think my friend Sean designed this on GeoCities, and then we ended up not using it.
Oh, man. This is great.
And that would have been like 99.
It's the shittiest looking website.
No, it was GeoCities, dude. Fuck.
And then, like, on the site.
My ICQ number is on there, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And on the site, it says, like, hello, my name is.
I did not write any of that. I guarantee you. Like, I've never seen this site. Oh, and I'm being perfectly honest.
So, when are we going to see Jaws?
As soon as we see your promotion.
Okay.
I want to see you attacking a woman in an alleyway.
Well, all right. I guess never. Way was the Vince Russo of some Canadian backyard fed? Well, he couldn't have been any worse as a booker than Ian Rotten. Okay. I'm trying to figure out why Review and Impact is so enjoyable.
Thanks.
Maybe it's because the TNA product is more interesting than the WWE fair. Maybe it's because it's something new. Or maybe, just maybe, it's because I can hear Way's spirit breaking a little more each show.
Why is our show entertaining, Way? It's one of the great wonders of life.
I don't know.
Shy Avigan, did you know Survivor Series 92 review facts? According to Sean Mooney, Bret has defended his world title in a two-month period more than anyone in WWF history. According to Vince McMahon, Rick Martel is a former IC champion. According to Razor Ramon, Randy Savage is a one-legged punk. The Survivor Series hotline average call is 3 minutes. After Yokozuna's win, Vince said, Yoko is going to be, then paused, then corrected himself and said, Yokozuna is an awesome force to be reckoned with. That's kind of funny. What could be the spoiler Vince was keeping from us? Next WWF champion? WWF champion for the majority of the next year and a half? Winning the Rumble and main eventing WrestleMania? All correct. And he finishes off, enjoyable show, first time watch, especially with the loss of Warrior and Bulldog that month. Bret versus Shawn was epic, even so early in his singles career. You could see the seeds of something big in HBK. I wouldn't classify that match as epic. It was good.
Yeah. Scott McCullough. I think that next year, John and Way should bring back their drinking contest they had held for a couple years during their birthdays with stips added. John wins, and Way must reveal all about his backyard fed, release any footage, etc. If Way wins, then John must release the Jaws tapes. Any thoughts, people?
See, we just tease people with stuff, and then it's like a carrot being dangled.
Oh, man.
Jack Pisco. Wei Ting is the Canadian version of Booker T for his SMC. And apparently John's audio wrestling show is a big hit with the listeners, even though no one has actually heard a soundbite. Now that's a build-up for the WrestleMania edition of Review Away next year. Will Wei and the rest of us be able to convince John to raid his audio vault by then? Never say never. Could you guys review a Cyber Sunday or a Taboo Tuesday?
What does that mean? How am I the Booker T of
SMC? Well, Booker has his own promotion. I don't know.
Okay. I'm the Booker T. Jermone Jackson, since
maybe
Raw...
Maybe meant because you're Booker Ting.
Oh, I get it. Oh, okay. That's kind of clever. Jermone Jackson, since Raw has become so boring to review, you guys should just watch AM Raw. It's the Raw show from Monday cut down to an hour. That's the only way I can stand to watch it nowadays. Let's do that. Let's review...
Depressing.
Yeah, let's review Raw on Sundays.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. AM. Brian Hillhouse, good God, that girl talk crap sounds like a nightmare that just won't end. How about some Neil Diamond?
All right, we'll play some Neil Diamond at the end of the show.
A horrible noise.
Tom O'Hegan, Kamala needs an agent because if he made that little money, he should have done something about it, especially if The Undertaker, who had only been in the WWF for a year and a half, was making half a mil. Why not go to the people in charge of WCW to get more than $800 just before Bash at the Beach because they would give more money before... changing the main event of a pay-per-view.
Daniel Stack. Hey, guys. Great review per usual of Survivor Series 92. I look forward to the review of WCW World War III 95. I believe this was the final appearance of the Yeti, who competed in the 60-man three-ring battle royal and was now a giant ninja instead of a giant mummy. You may recall this man dry-humping the Hulkster at Halloween Havoc 95, which you guys reviewed last year. Keep up the great work, fellas. Yes, that's correct.
This was the last appearance of the Yeti.
Yeah, that's too bad. What a way to go out.
Mark Sherman, along with Mountie, Warrior, and Bulldog not appearing as advertised, I remember that originally on the Survivor Series report, they announced that the Natural Disasters and the Bushwhackers would be teaming up, and they cut a little promo calling themselves the Bush Disasters. Does that anyone...
Certainly the double meaning must have been lost on the WWE.
The Bush Disasters. Why couldn't... Well, they should have been called the Natural Whackers. Does anyone remember this? Keep up the good work.
Oh, Lord.
I guess I never...
I do not remember
I never considered how funny of a name the Bushwhackers was.
It's probably an inside joke about something.
The Bushwhackers.
Andy Gordon. Hey, John and Wade. Great Survivor Series 92 event. Brett and Sean put on a good match, but it still wasn't time for Sean to be in the WWF title picture. Ric Flair and Scott Hall was an odd team to put together. By far the best match on the card was the WWE title match. What do you guys think of Miz as champion, and does he deserve it? Most of the Facebook fans disagree, but I think it's about time. Well, we just discussed that. I think it's a... I like the move. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be automatically not top caliber, but he's a good... Like, this is, for a man's first run, I think...
This is much like when Kurt Angle first won the title. I think he could keep the title to WrestleMania.
I'd say better than Kurt Angle, because The Miz already has a lot of heat behind him. Whereas Angle, The Miz, I actually enjoyed more than Angle's first run.
Angle also came along at a time when the company was so hot and it was so easy to make stars that it was like, you could get over a lot quicker in 2000 than you can in 2010. Mm-hmm. And The Miz has done a fantastic job. I'd like to see him keep the title till Mania. I thought Randy Orton was incredibly stale as champion, and he only had it 2 months.
Sure, but like I said, I thought that was more of just a babyface transition. But I know what you mean. Well, where were we here? Ryan Hillhouse?
Yes.
Right? It's Wednesday morning, and as I post this, I'm on my annual GO train ride down to Toronto from Newmarket to watch the Ontario High School Football Championships. My MP3 player is set to random, and an episode of Review Away just came on. I had to skip forward right away because there is an oldish man sitting directly in front of me. But I listen to the show so much that I know all of the golden moments from memory and can't stop smirking. Maybe for my troubles, John can give us a classic loud, quiet, loud Sid moment.
What was that
week.
Stood for? I had no idea what that meant.
Can you give us a classic Sid moment this week, John?
I can't do impressions on command.
Okay.
I'm just...
We'll just have to wait for a Sid appearance.
Ahmad Buttons. I hope you guys discussed the Jeff Hardy SWI shooting while intoxicated video on either Review and Impact or Review Away. It's too amazing. Did you see that video?
I haven't.
Why don't you check it out and we'll...
Do you want to watch it now?
Yeah, sure. Pull it up. I'll read the next one while you find it. Just it was in my update yesterday.
Oh, it's
just
right search. Here.
Okay, you got. Okay, well, fire it away.
Okay,
we'll play it until I get sick of it.
It's only 2 minutes. Here we go.
Audio at its finest. There. This is Jeff Hardy and Matt Hardy in a diner.
The first ever straight edge world heavyweight champion. I think Christian said it best. CM Punk, I think you're a nerd. I get cocky every now and then. I'll say, you pay to see me, but I made CM Punk a motherfucking superstar. And that's a fact, Jack, and I'll end it like this.
Bam! Ooh.
We can't even do that shit in your
company. Wade's genuine reaction to this video.
You should follow me. You should listen to my preaching because it's going to get you through life.
The gold is the final 15 seconds.
CM Punk, your way's not the right way, brother. That's what's cool about planet Earth. We're all different. If we were all like you, man, I would rather live on Pluto.
Pluto.
Way too cocky. Inside and outside the ring. It's kind of strange when you go up and see
this is amazing. Why is he touching his nose?
Hey, Jeff, how you doing, man? All these other guys. Hey, Jeff, how's everything going for you, man? It'll be all right. Let's back on the mat. See your way and see if you can say hello to me, man. Never did. Walk away, whatever.
This is messed up, man.
Whatever. Oh, well, yeah. Fuck that guy. And I just have one message to CM Punk. Fuck you. I made you the straight edge superstar you are. And I still don't believe that because I think you take Ambien and go to sleep, motherfucker.
This is better than reaction.
This will probably air on reaction.
Yeah, but here it is.
I have no idea what CM Punk still is with Amy Dumont. I do know. He is very dramatic and very emotional. And anytime she finds herself in a tough spot, I'm the guy she calls.
Wow. I guess it seemed to me that he was kind of half playing his character here with all the...
Now, I don't know for sure when this exactly took place.
Jeez.
Because everyone says that this happened after Jeff joined TNA. Mm-hmm. But to me, that's like, he's cutting a promo as a promo, like, when they were doing their feud, almost. Like, it's...
But he's giving the finger, this was like a clear, you know, at least if he was trying to be a heel character.
Well, it's a shoot. On the internet.
Oh, my
God. I don't know how these guys allowed this to be posted when they look like this. It makes them look really bad,
They've done worse. I mean, did you ever end up watching that Highway to Helms podcast with Matt Hardy? They get completely drunk in it, and they drink right on the podcast, and they just talk about everything.
I don't know.
CM Punk. I just find it amazing that these guys, Matt Hardy especially, they get more attention now that they're out of the WWF than when they were. Like, Matt Hardy especially, we've talked about him so much since.
I don't know. It's somewhat died off to me, I think, with the whole Matt Hardy deal.
I love it.
Wow.
Great.
Nonetheless, that was the video, everybody. Let's finish off here. Why don't you finish off with Merrick?
Merrick Drowning.
Downing.
Merrick Downing. Sorry. Hi, guys. Had to write in after an awesome review away.
Or an awesome Raw.
Oh, okay. Awesome Raw, sorry. It looks like Vince is really sticking it to these kids. The product has a tendency to pull itself out of the shitter. For a minute, when Cena was doing the crowd chant, I thought he was going to turn heel. Yeah. Good win for The Miz. Awesome timing. Punk on the mic had some classic moments. Isn't she a bit young for you, King? And her hair. Anyway, keep up the good work, and I'm definitely appreciating all the hours of audio wrestling you guys produce. Impact is a welcome addition for what it's worth. At least they can do tag team wrestling, I guess. Listening for a decade from England.
Well, thanks very much, Merrick, for listening. And we appreciate everyone who sent feedback. And actually, before we end off here with our song way and our pick for next week, I forgot to go to this. I did this interview with Dave Meltzer like a year ago, mm-hmm. and it was for a politics that I never ended up putting together. And I went back today to listen to the interview because I thought I might have asked him in that interview about that World War III incident. Mm-hmm. I didn't. But nonetheless, this interview, it was kind of talking about the reaction over the years by talent to the Observer and how it's still like this guarded thing about wrestlers not wanting to let others know that they read the Observer, how it's been accepted, how he goes about kind of getting his news, and you never have people very rarely quoted in the Observer because it's such a close-knit industry that you don't want to be quoted as being a guy that talks to Dave Meltzer and stuff. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I talked to him about this whole kind of culture surrounding the Observer, and I thought we'd play a little bit of that in honor of this World War III event tonight where his Observer was positioned.
Yeah. Burnt. Sacrificed.
Yes, on World War III. Nonetheless, let's go to Dave Meltzer.
I wanted to just get some of your thoughts. I mean, dealing with the WWE and kind of the varying degrees of cooperation you've had from the company over the years and kind of where things are now when it comes to dealing with the WWE and how helpful they might be towards you.
Well, me personally, I mean, my official is like zero cooperation. I mean, it's gone from great to terrible to great to terrible over the years, and I think that if actually the funny thing is that if TNA actually like did really really well and actually was a threat, I would think that it would probably end up being pretty good because the best cooperation I had was when WCW was kicking their ass. Boy, they were cooperative as hell then, but when they're on top and autonomous, they're not going to be that cooperative. I think that it's kind of funny because in the Shane McMahon thing, his position was global media, and people are kind of like, oh, Shane was so good at his job. And to me, knowing reporters all over the world, the WWE as far as media cooperation, they're a freaking joke. I mean, seriously. And especially having dealt with UFC and even TNA for that matter. It's just like, WWE thinks that they're like, good at this. They're terrible at this. They're only lucky that they have so much television and they're great at what they produce, and they go right to the fans and they don't need it. But as far as like, cooperation and things like that, you know, they live in their own little world.
Well, yeah, and the part that strikes me almost the most is just the amount of control they have over talent, where to even contact talent, I mean, they won't even respond to you because of fear of not getting it approved by the WWE. And I can really see this eventually, that WWE talent won't even be allowed to go online onto Twitter with some of the incidents we've seen. And it's just, it's amazing just the level of control they have over their own talent that I don't think you can really compare to any other industry to that degree that they have that control.
Well, I mean, you know, from like whatever cooperation you get, I mean, I know from other things, you know, like when you interview a guy and you've got the PR guy right there and you've got the guy scared to death to say boo, you know what I mean? I mean, and I know guys there who, you know, I will talk to, but boy, I mean, if I were to talk to them for like a story, you know, like attributed, I mean, this is if I was even allowed to do that, they'd be saying the exact opposite thing, and I wouldn't blame them because you have to. I mean, it's like, it's, you know, and maybe that's good because, I mean, if you look at UFC, UFC gets embarrassed by what the talent says a lot of the time because they're not so, you know, controlling. But in the long run, it also, you know, is also the kind of the rep of, well, you interview a WWE guy, you know, unless it's like one or two guys that are untouchable, and even them, they're not doing very many interviews, you know, and you know, Triple H can probably say anything he wants. The rest of these guys, even Cena, are very careful about what they say. So it's like you're not getting the, you know, yeah, you can get quotes from the guys, but is it what they really think, or is it what they're told to think? And it's like, it's what they're told to think, so what value is it really anyway?
Is there still that stigma, Dave, of certain guys, you know, in the locker rooms, if it's revealed, you know, that they do read the Observer, is it more something hiding that from management versus colleagues and coworkers?
What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, that stigma's still there in WWE. I don't think it's there as much in TNA, and it's not there at all in UFC. And, you know, I mean, what can I say? I mean, it's just, in fact, in UFC, it's the opposite. You know, I mean, in UFC, pretty much everyone there, it's like, you know, you're supposed to read the Observer. It's your industry newsletter. In WWE, you know, there's a lot of office people who read it, but, you know, if Vince ever hears about it, you know, it's like, you know, they'll freak out. So it's, and I think it's kind of behind the times. I mean, and the whole funny part of the whole thing is it stems from the idea from 1982 that, you know, Dave Meltzer was the guy who wrote in the newsletter that wrestling wasn't real. And it's like, we're 27 years later, we're completely behind that, and he's still, Dave Meltzer, he's the one who says that wrestling's not real. And it's like, geez, Vince, for the last 20 years, so have you. You know, it's like, I feel like it's like, he hates me, but he doesn't even, you know, if he actually thought about why, it'd be like ludicrous. But no, but it's the thing, like, you know, again, Vince wants to be in control of everything in the industry. So that is what, you know, that's the bottom line, is it's not even the fake thing. It's Vince wants full control. He wants to run everything, and he feels that he deserves to run anything, and anyone who is in the industry and not under his control is somehow, that's somehow wrong because it's his industry. And so, therefore, you know, he just doesn't, you know, he wants them gone because, you know, he wants full control.
Do you see the UFC ever getting to that state of trying to control who the fighters speak to and having that kind of tight grip control? Or is it a completely different philosophy in the UFC and kind of how fighters are dealt with the media and such?
I don't think it will ever get to where WWE is, but I do think that it will get to where they will want more control and less chance of embarrassment. It's difficult because the owners believe that they are a sport. And with Vince, it's like he believes that he owns everything. I mean, UFC wants to own everything, but at the end of the day, you know, they think that they're a sport. If I were to write a negative story on UFC, they will not be happy, but they will just go, well, you know, we're, you know, as I say, like, the show last Saturday was a so-so show, because it was. You know, just a mediocre show. You know, I'm sure they're going to look at that and just go, oh, God, you know, why did, you know, I wish you said it was a good show. But at the end of the day, they're going to go, you know, it's not going to bother them that much. With WWE, I mean, I could say it's a good show and they're mad because it's like, you know, they just want to be in complete control of everything. You know, it's Vince came up in a business that had no real media. So therefore, he doesn't believe, you know, it's like the media is just his enemy. Whereas with UFC, you know, there's times they think the media is their enemy, but they accept that it exists because they came up, you know, in a business that always, you know, they came from that boxing framework where there was always tons of media there, and they want more media. They don't want less media. You know, I mean, Vince doesn't, you know, Vince is afraid of media. They, you know, they cultivate media. They want to be nice to media, you know, and they get pissed at them for sure. But, you know, it's a thing that they accept it's part of the game, and Vince thinks it's not part of the game, and somehow it needs to be gotten rid of because of that.
A double dose of Dave.
Yes, you can never have enough Dave Meltzer on the show. So
that's very fascinating. I bet he's honestly, like, we talk about it a lot, just you and I in our private lives, but he is probably one of the most interesting people that exists.
Just the amount of news he puts out every week in the Observer is just unbelievable. And for those that want to check it out, go to WrestlingObserver.com. They do a lot of audio shows there, and of course have their newsletters there from Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez. So as we end off here, Wei, I do have a song in mind because I would really want to play it.
Oh, let me make my pick for.
Yeah,
for
that's what I was going to say.
Oh, okay.
So first off, your pick before we go to my song.
Well, seeing as how it's the King of the Ring tomorrow, I'd like to go back to a classic King of the Ring, one featuring the commentary of Football Hall of Famer Art Donovan. And this is the King of the Ring 1994, the same one that Owen Hart won. And I don't really
This one has gotten a lot of requests over the years.
Yeah. So finally we're doing it. King of the Ring 1994 featuring Art Donovan on commentary.
Okay. And on our way out, Wei, everyone knows that we did quite a bit of focus on the Jersey Shore this past year, and a lot of the talent on the Jersey Shore has sprung out into various different fields, and now Angelina has come out with her new song called I'm Hot. And I thought before we go to the song, Wei, which someone was so gracious enough to post, we could read some of the lyrics, Wei. So I've typed them out here, and I'm just going to read the first paragraph, and then you can read the second one. And we'll just to give everyone a sample of this song. Hey guys, it's Angelina, the girl from Staten Island's back. And yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. I came to play. I'm here to stay. I'll do it my way every day. Angelina turns it on. Party till the break of dawn. All the freaking lights shine strong. Blast the music all night long. Hanging out with all her friends. Living like there is no end. It's Angelina, like you never seen her. So pick up from the second paragraph there, Wei.
Representing you best be betting another Armageddon when the sun is setting. The rain don't forgetting, all the flames are jetting. There's no telling what this girl is getting. From the clubs, the thug, the big paste up. Depending on which ever way that this girl rubs directly to her hub. It's like blowing bubbles up in her into her tub. So fill your cup because it's up and toast to the girl. Let's give it up. Here she comes to do her stuff. Whenever she's around, you'll see that's what's up. From the Jersey Diner to giving people shiners to the famous Moore liner in the fashion
designer.
Sounds
like John Cena's theme song.
Yeah, Angelina's on the run. She loves to live life, having fun. Angelina turns it on, party till the break of dawn. All the freaking lights shine. I don't want to do the rest.
It's Hot, Everybody by Angelina. We'll chat with you Tuesday for Review of Raw.
Hey guys, it's Angelina, the girl from Staten Island's back. And yeah, there's nothing you can do about it.
I came to play, I'm here to stay, and I'll do it my way every day.
Angelina turns it on, party till the break of dawn. Freaking light shine strong, blast the music all night long. Hanging out with all the friends, living like there is no end. It's Angelina, like you never seen her. She used to be the badass girl, yeah, from the hood. But now she's busting all the doors down in Hollywood. She's doing all the things that people never thought she could. But that's just what makes Angelina misunderstood.
I'm hot. Cream cone with a cherry on top, and I got a lot. No, I won't stop till I pop to the top. I take a shot, it hits the spot, then dance a lot until I drop. I shop and shop, I just can't stop. I even hop the cop, I popped his crap. Huh. People diss me, try to dismiss me, wait for me, then say they miss me. Girls get jealous, the boys wanna kiss me, damn, their eyes are keeping busy. Some little chase, try to wrap my case, match my pace, then run the race. You can't replace or crowd my space, so step up, bitch, or I'll punch your face.
Angelina turns it on, party till the break of dawn. All the freaking light shines strong, blast the music all night long. Hanging out with all the friends, living like there is no end. It's Angelina, like you never seen her. Represent.
getting, you best be betting. Another Armageddon when the sun is setting. There ain't no forgetting, all the flames are jetting. There's no telling into what this girl is getting. From the clubs, the thugs, the big pay stubs. Depending on whichever way that this girl rubs, she's plugging everything directly to her cup. It's like pulling all the bubbles up into a tub. So fill your cup, raise it up, and toast to the girl, let's give it up. Here she comes to do her stuff. Whenever she's around, you'll see what's up. From the Jersey diners, they're giving people shiners, to the famous one-liners and the fashion designers. Angelina's on the one. She loves to live life having fun. Angelina turns it on. Party till the break of dawn. All the freaking light shines strong. Blast the music all night long. Hanging out with all the friends. Living like there is no end. It's Angelina, like you never seen her.
I came to play, I'm here to stay. I'll do it my way every day.
I'm here to stay and I'll do it my way every day.
Every day.